He's defeated every champion from every organization the sport of mixed martial arts has ever seen, and retired from the octagon as the biggest draw and the industry's highest paid athlete of all time. And now, Chael Sonnen's on PodcastOne.com. And for that, you're welcome.
Happy Wednesday, everybody. We are back with another great show of Your Welcome. I'm Chael Sonnen. I'm glad you all decided to stop in and stay a while. We are going to have the one and only George St. Pierre coming up in just a moment. Later in the show, Tommy Toehold. What an interesting guy. You're going to want to stick around for that. I contacted him. I asked him to do the show, and I only asked him one thing. I just simply said, are you going to be in character as Tommy Toehold? Or can we reveal the fourth curtain and you just come on and we can dig into it? And he said, I'm in. He said, just don't say my real name. Just let me come on as Tommy, but I'll just be myself. So that's going to be fun. I've never spoke to him out of character before. I'm excited about that. You know, before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you all about a new sponsor, Casper Mattresses. Casper is an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price. A Casper mattress provides resilience and long-lasting supportive comfort. That's because Casper's Mattresses is one of a kind. A new hybrid mattress that combines premium latex foam and memory foam. It has just the right sink and just the right bounce. The latex foam and the memory foam work together for better nights and brighter days. We all know that a good mattress can often cost over $1,500, but Casper mattresses cost between $500 and $1,000. Guys, that's from a twin all the way up to a king. You can get an obsessively engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price. It's pretty easy to understand. Casper cuts out the middleman. There's no showroom floors. There's no retailers and salesmen. You go online, you buy the whole thing. The savings gets passed on to you, and it's completely risk-free. And if it wasn't, I wouldn't be talking about them. When you go online and you order from these guys, you have 100 days. That's just over 3 months to return the thing. It's that simple. Casper understands the importance of truly getting a mattress that in all reality, you're going to spend a third of your life on. You get to try the thing out for 100 days with free delivery and painless returns. All the mattresses are made in the USA. If you act right now, you can save $50 on a mattress purchase. You got to visit my special Casper site. It's casper.com/Chael. Then use promo code Chael, C-H-A-E-L, no capitals. Again, that's casper.com/Chael with Chael as the promo code. Now, let's get this show on the road. Big news to some. Rampage Jackson will not be fighting coming up at the UFC in Montreal. I told you listeners this the day he was signed. I am the only media member that I have seen that reported this from day one. This is basic contract law. If Viacom claims they have a contract with Rampage, they have a contract with Rampage. He cannot, and his managers cannot, and nobody else can come out and say that they don't, except for a judge. And it doesn't matter what his contract says. He does not get to declare that the contract is invalid. And neither does anybody else, except for a judge. Before you get to that judge, you will sit on the shelf doing nothing. I told you guys this the day this came out, that this fight would not happen. When he then was given an opponent of Fabio Maldonado, who's tougher than hell and a very nice guy that can't draw flies, you should have smelt something fishy here, okay? He has a contract with Viacom because Viacom says they have a contract with him. That's it. Nobody gets to break that contract. Nobody. except for a judge. This was transparent and obvious from the beginning. You took a major player out of the game. That was the move here. This went over all the media people's heads except mine. I told you guys the day that this happened. This fight will not take place. You do not put a former world champion and one of the biggest drawing stars in the industry against Fabio Maldonado unless you know that the fight isn't going to take place. You cannot have a dispute, listeners, and then settle the dispute on your own. You cannot go get an attorney, have him agree with you, and settle a dispute. One person settles a dispute in America, and he is known as a judge. And until you get before him, you are not going to fight. The play here was to take a major player out of the game and stick him on the shelf, and that's exactly what was done. It's exactly what I told my listeners months ago. The wait is finally over. Baseball season is here at last, and the excitement continues all season long for DraftKings.com, the official daily fantasy partner of Major League Baseball. Daily fantasy means no season-long commitments, just instant cash, instant gratification. Why wait until the end of the season to claim victory when you can win huge cash every day? At DraftKings, it's like a brand new season every time you play. Just select two pitchers and eight position players, stay under the salary cap, and you could be on your way to an enormous payday. Last year, Peter from Colorado won $1 million at DraftKings in one day, just playing fantasy baseball. Hundreds of thousands of fantasy sports fans just like you have already cashed in at DraftKings. Now it's your turn. Hurry to DraftKings.com now and enter promo code CHAIL to play for free. You could win part of $300 million in prizes being awarded this season. Use promo code CHAIL for instant entry right now at DraftKings.com. DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com. I am Chael Sonnen. When I come back, George St. Pierre.
Hey, guy, you know that you want to be the guy that all your buds want to be.
Oh, man, I want to party with him.
Yeah, that guy. Well, then here's how you do it. Just listen to these two shows every week, The Art of Charm.
We talk about how to create confidence, how to get people to like and trust you, productivity, time management, biohacking, and more.
And The Chive.
You never know who's going to drop by the studio, and you certainly never know what we're going to say to them.
Download new episodes of The Chive and The Art of Charm every week at podcastone.com.
It's a guy thing, all right?
Be that guy.
This is Your Welcome with Chael Sonnen.
All right, we are back to Your Welcome, joined with George St. Pierre. George, what's happening, buddy?
Hi, how are you, Chael? Good?
I'm awesome, man, and I'm pumped that you're here, more importantly. What's going on? What part of the world are you in? Are you out in Montreal?
No, I'm home, yeah, in Montreal right now. Just finished training, and I'm back home, you know, talking to you on the phone.
What kind of training did you do? Was it gymnastics, or you were in the MMA room?
This morning was gymnastics, yeah. Yesterday was more mixed martial art oriented, you know, so I'm having a lot of fun nowadays, you know, keep myself in shape, healthy. And I'm not training for competition. I'm helping the guys who are gonna compete pretty soon. I'm more a training partner than in training camp, so to speak.
You're a good teammate, man. That's awesome. I imagine you're working with Rory.
Yeah, Rory will be back soon. I think he's in Vancouver right now. He's from Vancouver, which is on the western part of Canada. And he comes in Montreal during his training camp, so he's going to be back soon. But I was working a lot with Alex Garcia and also Tom Breeze, who's going to fight in Brazil in the card, which headline Thiago Alves and Carlos Condit.
All right, very good. Is Gunnar Nelson still in that room? Is he training out there at TriStar, or did he go back home?
I was training with Gunnar Nelson when New York, but Gunnar is originally from Iceland, I believe, And I met him. I was training with him when I go to New York, you know, with John Danaher, under the supervision of John Danaher. And it was mostly grappling-oriented training. We never really did, like, striking, like more kickboxing training with takedown. It was mostly grappling-oriented, you know. So we started standing up, and then we go until, submission, you know, on the ground, you know.
You know, you bring up John Danaher. Kenny Florian is like Danaher's biggest fan. He just loves the guy. And Florian insists that Danaher sleeps on a jiu-jitsu mat, swears to me that is his mattress at home. Is he putting me on, or is that real?
Yeah, no, he's a very interesting character. He's the best grappling coach I ever had, of course. He's incredible. He really changed my game. He's one of the reasons why I had a lot of success in mixed martial arts. And he's truly, like, he's an incredible tactician, you know. And we always call him, like, the best-kept secret. You know, this guy is just amazing. He's also he's a PhD, I believe, from Columbia University in philosophy. He started Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu when he was 28 years old. Now I think he's 45. He's just incredible. And the reason why he's so good, it's not because of his athletic ability, because unfortunately he's got like a bad leg. You know, he's got like a knee, like an injury, like an injury to his knees. So unfortunately he doesn't have the full range of motion of one of his legs. But he's so good because he is so smart and such a quick learner. Imagine that he started jiu-jitsu when he was 28 years old, and I believe by the time he was like 30, he was like one of the teachers at Enzo Gracie Academy. And right now I'm just telling you, like, for real, like when I roll with him, like he tapped me like every time. Like when I roll like a round of 5 minutes, he's gonna tap me like almost 90% of the time, you know.
Wow.
He's just incredible. And if he's that good, not because he's stronger, or, you know, some guys are good because you can say, oh, they're big or stronger or, you know, very athletic. He's very good just because he's very, yeah, he's so technical and extremely smart. And he's very good also at teaching. You know, because he doesn't have a crazy athleticism background, he's very good at giving his knowledge, because he had to understand the mechanic of the movement for himself, and he's very good at giving his knowledge. So that's why I believe he's I believe he's probably the best grappling coach I've been in my entire life.
I've heard that. You're not the first one to say that about him. I've met him. I have tremendous respect for him as well. But mainly just from stories like the one you just told. I've met him one time in my life. I had just fought Anderson Silva. I got submitted with like a minute left in the fight with a triangle choke. We were in California.
Yeah.
I go backstage. I'm hanging my head. I got a couple of cuts above my eyes. I'm sweating. I got my shirt and my shorts still on. And I was leaning up against this box that was in the back. And Danaher walks up to me and he says, if you ever get stuck in a position you don't know what to do with your hands, and then he shows me. He just shows you, lock your hands together and wait, and then the guy can't triangle. It's all he says. And I just looked at him, and it was like a light went on in my head. I'm like, oh, my God, why did I not do that?
It made you even more sad, you know?
Oh, it was the worst, because he was so right, and he was just a stranger. Yeah. I knew who he was, of course, and he walks up, and he just simply says that message, and then he disappears, and I was like, oh, my God, that I'd have the belt right now if I just thought of that. Anyway.
Yeah, but he's got like, I don't know how to call it. Like, he's not a gift, but I believe he's just very good at explaining very complicated and sophisticated technique and make it look so simple. He's just incredible. I remember the first time I went to New York and I went in his class, you know. And what is funny about John Danaher, in most of his best students are similar to him. If you go there and you happen to be in New York, you know, and to go in one of his class, you'll find out that most of his best students are actually not very, like, big and muscular guys. They're all, like, I would say, more very intellectual people. they're kind of skinny. And I, one of them is Gary Tonon. He's different. You know, obviously he's very, you know, he's very athletic and very strong. But a lot of his students are not, like, they don't have athletic background. They have, like, normal job and stuff, but they're, like, the best guy in the academy, and they kick everyone's ass, you know? So it's pretty crazy that when you walk in that room, you know, normally the guys who are the toughest guy in academy are the guy that are known, you know, and the more athletic guy, but it's the opposite in this room. And, like, all his best students are just, cerebral guys, you know, very, like, intellectual people who, like, normal jobs, you know. After that, they leave the class, they put their suit and tie and just walk out the class, and you're like, what the hell is this guy? He's not a full-time athlete. He's like, no, he's going to work. He's a lawyer or a stockbroker, but he kicked everyone's ass, you know. It's just insane.
You know what, though, George, for MMA, it generally doesn't work that way. You know, a smart guy, it tends to work against him in MMA, statistically speaking. But for jiu-jitsu, it's a real thinking man's game. You know, they'll say that it's human chess, and that's real. From my experience, that's real. So I'm not totally shocked to hear you say, you know, Danaher with a PhD, or that his best students are lawyers and accountants and stuff. For jiu-jitsu, it's a smart man's sport.
I agree. And if you take a sport like wrestling, I mean, it's very technical, but you need some kinds of athletic ability. Jiu-jitsu is one of the sports that you could be really not athletic and be very successful, you know. You can beat a guy, like, just because of your knowledge, and even if you're smaller, if the other guy has the size, the strength, the power, sometimes you still can beat him. But it's true that what you said, like, about mixed martial art, because it's mixed, and it englobes different sports, like wrestling, for example. I mean, to be world champion in wrestling, you need to be technical, smart, but you need also to be athletic. You can't really, you know what I mean? I agree with that 100%.
So, George, let me tell you a story. I'm going to switch gears here. The last time that you came on, you and I, something had happened, and I had just seen some show on aliens or something like that. I started telling you about it, and we started talking in all of these funny dimensions, and we eventually came across a concept known as missing time, which is where somebody will all of a sudden it's 3 hours later and they have no idea what happened to them earlier in their day. So with that in mind, I want to tell you a quick story. I almost like a confession. This is when I started texting you the other day like crazy, and you're like, what is it you want to talk about? And I'm like, just come on. Well, here's actually what my motivation was. So this is what happened to me. I was in practice. I don't know the order of events to tell this story, so let me jump in. I was in practice. I'm wrestling, so we're bent over. We're firing shots. I headbutt my teammate. His name is Josh Bennett, and Josh has a steel plate in his head, not MMA-related. He ended up having whatever done on his skull, and they put a steel plate. So we butted heads, and it hard, really hard. But I was cautious about it because I even said to him, Josh, are you okay? I was worried about him because he had this operation on his head. Okay, fast forward. Mm-hmm. Fast forward, I start getting some I live in a very small town. We've got about 40,000 residents, but our whole community is involved in one hill. That's where the grocery store is, a couple of banks are up there, the dry cleaners, the Starbucks. Everything in our town happens in this one small area. So I get about 3 text messages from friends saying, hey, you know, what were you doing the other day? You know, you were up at the liquor store in your bathrobe. What was going on? And I didn't know what they were talking about. You know, I don't drink for one, but my buddy does own the liquor store, and I do pop in on him every now and then to say hi. But I definitely wouldn't have been roaming around the neighborhood in daylight in my bathrobe. So I get this about 3 times, and I'm going, you know, what's the deal with this? So I call the liquor store, and I ask the guy straight up. I said, man, I'm going to ask you a question, and I don't want to get into it. I just need a yes or no. Did I come into the liquor store yesterday in a bathrobe? And he said, Chael, not only did you come in a bathrobe, he said, you wouldn't leave. And I go, well, what do you mean? He's only got one cash register, George, and apparently I stood there and blocked it as customer after customer came in. And I don't recall any of this. And so the only thing I can point to is that I had butted heads with my teammate Josh. And on most concussions, you don't remember them. But I remember butting his head. So that's when I started texting you nonstop, was I wanted to know if you had dealt with something like this. Because you had alluded to being at least conscious of the fact that what we go through isn't great for us. Have you had any weird experiences like this, man? Have you showed up somewhere in your bathrobe?
No. I mean, not that I know of. I mean, people would have probably told me if it happened. No, what happened is, yeah, since I'm a kid, it happened even before I start training mixed martial arts, you know, like those memory thing, you know, that we talk about. But the thing is, it already happened in, you know, in my sport that I got hit or something, you know, I have like a flash, you know, like even though you're not completely knocked out, you know, sometimes a concussion, there's different level of concussion. You can get hit and you keep training and, you know, but without knowing it, you have a concussion. And this can affect your memory, of course. I believe it could be the cause of this, you know. It's something that is very strange, you know. Like, unfortunately, I don't have the answer. I wish I would, but I do not.
And see, misery likes company, and I'm embarrassed by it, for one, but I wanted you to confess. I wanted you to go, you know what, Chael, I did, and I wanted you to have a worse story than I had, and apparently you don't, doggone it. But I did go into a doctor. I told him what happened.
It never happened to me. I recall that, you know, at one point, like, I could have had last. After one of the sparring, maybe I got hit or something, you know, like it happened to everybody, you know, in sparring, you get hit, you get a flash or something, and then you keep training, and then you, after the training, you're like, yeah, may, you know, like you feel a little bit like some, you know, what happened is, like, did you ask your trainer, did I really get hurt or something? It's like, no, you just get hit hard, you know, and you kind of trying to remember what really happened, but it never happened at that much, you know, that I am walking in a robe in a store, and no.
Right. I would have denied. I mean, I could have taken a lie detector test and passed it because I did not believe this was true, and that I didn't say anything. Because, you know, if my father-in-law finds out I'm out roaming around the neighborhood in a bathrobe, he's going to pull off a job site, and he's going to be in my living room in 30 minutes figuring out what in the hell's going on. So I just kept it to myself, and then I finally went to a doctor, told him what happened, and he just said, yeah, you just got a concussion, but... What was weird about it, George, is, and I don't mean to keep beating, but what was weird about it is, generally when you have a concussion, from the stuff I've read and heard, you don't remember when it happened. You could go, well, I was out playing football, and then I kind of got blurry. I remember butting heads with this guy because I was worried about him because he'd had the brain surgery before, the surgery on his skull, and had the metal plate in there. So I remember the act, which is why I self-diagnosed that I didn't have a concussion, but I don't have any other answer for... blocking the cash register at 3 p.m. in my neighborhood in a bathrobe. So there you go.
But sometimes it's not only a concussion, Chael, you know, like I, for example, I'm just going to give you an example. In every of my fight, you know, it's such a rush of adrenaline that I rarely remember the fight. Like all my fights, like I remember some clip of it, but I don't remember the fight. Like my last fight, same thing. The one before, same thing. The other one before, I remember only the clip. But if you ask me, like, oh, do you think you won or do you think you lost? You know, I can barely tell you. I mean, I have an idea of it, but I don't remember, like, point by point, like, of the fight. So that's why after a fight, I like to go home and watch it again, because for me, it happened so fast, because I believe it's not only concussion. Even some of my fight that have been, like, very fast, and I've never even got hit, you know, I don't even remember it because I think it's because of the emotion, you know, like you live something that is so intense that make you a little bit, that affect your memory. It could be that too, you know. I think it's not only one reason. It could be many reasons of why you're losing the memory, you know.
Yeah, I think that's interesting, but I'm cautious of it. I want to keep an eye on it, man, not only for myself, but for other people. Let me switch gears here. Have you been following the UFC's going through what's called a world tour right now to promote the Conor McGregor Jose Aldo fight? Are you watching any of this?
I've seen the press conference where Conor McGregor grabbed the belt.
Yeah, and, that was awesome.
So stole the belt to Jose Aldo. I was like, oh my God, it's crazy.
Did you see him put his feet on the table and declare himself the King of Dublin?
Yeah, I've seen it. That's the thing, you know. Like, I think it's, you know, Conor McGregor, he could be smart or very dumb. It depends, you know. But I think Conor McGregor is very skilled. You know, he can back what he says. But What could be the strategy for Conor in that case could be like, no, everyone that I've fought, Jose Aldo, it's a little bit when you fought Anderson Silva, I believe. Everybody that I've fought Anderson Silva before you did, they were all respectful and they kind of scared him, you know, at the point that they kind of over-respect him. They put an aura around him. And when you fight a guy and you put an aura of invincibility around him, it affects you mentally. And you broke that publicly, saying that you don't care, you were going to beat him and stuff. And nobody have ever done that. And if it wouldn't have been that for that mistake that you got caught with, you would have won the fight quite easy, as a matter of fact. And I believe what is happening is Conor McGregor is trying to do similar thing that you did to Anderson Silva. Everybody that I fought Jose Aldo, he's a very flamboyant fighter, you know, like he's very dangerous and he has that aura of invincibility around himself and he's like the best pound for pound in the world right now. And that's what I believe. I think Conor McGregor is trying to play that game, you know, try to get into his head and maybe it's going to work, maybe it's not. You know, we'll see what's going to happen.
Yeah, I think this McGregor is fantastic. You know, he's got a weird style. He's definitely entertaining. Let's leave the entertainment out of it. I think his skills really are fantastic. But to say that he's a top three, top five, even a top 10 guy in that weight class, man, that's a big compliment because that's a loaded weight class. You start talking about Jose Aldo, who, as you said, is one of the best, period, pound for pound. Then you got your Chad Mendes and your Frankie Edgars. Man, that's murderer's row right there. I just don't think you could throw a guy in out of Ireland. I mean, let's make it geographical. Ireland isn't putting out great boxers, great fighters, great wrestlers. Who's he training with in Ireland that could then produce a guy that could beat all of those guys? I think that's a fair question.
I agree, but doesn't mean nothing. I'm going to give you an example. Became world champion. I was training with unknown people. When I first beat Matthews, trust me, I first beat Matthews, my training partner was only David Loiseau, and I had also Raz Zahabi, who were not really known at the time. I mean, and I didn't have any known training partner. I was training with the guys. Another example is Gegar Mousasi in Pride.
Sure.
Remember Gegar Mousasi? He's, you know, nobody knew where he was from, who he was training with, but he was an extremely successful guy. There's a lot of guys like this that they come from nowhere, but they have their ways. And also, I believe confidence has a lot to play in it. I've trained with a lot of guys. For their respect, I don't say a name, but in training, they're not very good. Like, I've trained with many guys that are not good in training. And when they fight, I'm amazed to see what they do because they're so much better than what they were in training. And I'm like, how come? How did he do this? It's incredible. It's not even the same guy. Because they have confidence in themselves, you know?
Sure.
When they apply a technique, they believe in it 100% and they go for it. And you know, I believe it's one of the big keys, confidence. You know, if you have confidence, yeah, it changed the game a lot. And sometimes it's the opposite. You have some guys in the training room that are just amazing, but when they go and fight, they're not even the same. I mean, the opposite is true as well, you know?
Yeah. I agree. George, let me ask you one final question, buddy. Metamoris, you know, these grappling-only events, for example, and Metamoris has really stepped forward. Abu Dhabi as well, but you only see that once every couple of years. Do you enjoy this stuff as much as you do MMA? Is that something that you have considered doing, or are you even a fan of that?
I know Metamoris. I know this. The only thing is, for me right now, I took a break out of competition. I didn't want to just take a break of mixed martial art. I come since I'm 9 years old, you know, 9, 10 years old. I start competing in karate, so I've been competing all the time. I just took a break of the competition, you know, that's just what I needed to. And if I ever feel to compete, to tell you the truth, I like to compete to the highest level, you know.
Sure.
If I do something, I do it because I want to be the best at. And I do not believe, with my age and the time that I have left in my prime, I could be the best at in a grappling department. But I believe that if ever I want to come back and fight, I could be the best in mixed martial art if I find the fun and I have the feel for it. If I train hard and I have the pleasure to do it, I believe I can still be on top. But that's the thing. You know, if I would have to come back in competition, it would be in mixed martial art more than in pure grappling. Unless if it's for like maybe a super fight or something, you know.
Sure. And you know what, George, you were completely humble because I think you could walk in today and be the best grappler out there. But maybe that'll be one of those questions we never know. I just wanted to throw you the question.
Yeah, it's just a different sport, you know. Like guys who are very good at grappling, some stuff actually you do in grappling that wouldn't be very good for mixed martial arts because it would put you in a position that you can get hit. You know what I mean? And the other way around, it works too. If you take the best guy in grappling and make him compete in a grappling competition against the best guy in mixed martial art, probably the best grappler will win. You know, and like in boxing, same thing. Wrestling, same thing. You know, it's a total different game.
Yeah. No, I think that's right. You know, since you've left the UFC, that division's in shambles. And when I say shambles, it's a very highly anticipated division. I just mean, that was the wrong word, shambles. I mean, there's a lot of parity. That belt is flipping around, and that belt's going to keep flipping around. I can't say enough good things about Robbie Lawler, but I can tell you he's not going to hold that strap very long. It's just too competitive right now.
It's very, very tight, you know. Like, if you look at the last fight, I mean, I'm going to tell you from my perspective, you know, that's kind of weird. You know, the first time Hendricks fought Lawler, I believe Lawler wanted to give it to Hendricks. And the last time, I thought Hendricks, I scored 3-2 for Hendricks, but they gave it to Lawler. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very, very tight competition. You know, these guys, they're all very, very tight. And now Rory is coming into the mix, and I really hope Rory, I believe he can be champion. I'll be very happy if Rory can take the belt, you know?
It's going to be hard to imagine that he can't, you know. You were on your last fight. Your fight with Johnny Hendricks was the main event of the night fought.
Same thing.
Yeah, that Rory fought. I was just going to say, you know, that Rory fought Lawler. You know, you were there in the back. We both were. So I know we saw that fight. And that was a big surprise, man. That whole arena was shocked that Lawler pulled that off. And he seemed to really gain momentum from that. The question is, can he do it twice?
Well, we'll see. You know, like, I mean, Lawler is a dangerous guy. You know, anything can happen. I truly believe that if Rory come with his best game, you know, he's better than Lawler, and I believe he's better than Hendricks as well. But, you know, it's not the best fighter that wins the fight. It's the guy that will fight the best the night of the fight. You know what I mean? It's like football. It's not the best team that wins the Super Bowl. It's the team that show up the night of the game and play the best. It's the same story in everything, in every sport.
Yeah, that's it. You know, did you see this thing that came out a little bit before we started talking here, George, that Rampage Jackson will not be able to fight on that card in Montreal? Did you see that news?
Oh, no. I used to. Oh, no, that sucked. It's so bad. Because the card, a lot of fights have been canceled. You know, Rory's fight got canceled. Like, Carl Lombard got cut on steroids. Then you have Barao who got, I think Dillashaw got hurt, and now you have Rampage that is out. It's a disaster, you know?
It is a disaster, and you know, it's what runs most MMA companies right out of business. Fortunately, the UFC's roster is big enough. They'll scramble. They'll come up with something better than they even started with. That's what usually happens, at least. But yeah, this Rampage thing got pulled, but man, this thing was weird from the beginning, George. He's got a contract with Viacom that he declared is void. Well, contracts don't work. You can't declare a contract void. A judge has to do that. This thing was weird from the very beginning, and they finally asked for a restraining order, a temporary restraining order, and of course it was granted. So I was just wondering if you had heard about that because the fight's going on in Canada. I figured that would be big news. Rampage's return, it is a pretty big deal, man. Rampage has a lot of support in this sport.
Absolutely. He's a veteran. You know, I remember I start in UFC, I was watching Rampage. He's one of the icons in the sport, you know. Like, I was a big fan of all his big knockout, you know. Shit, man, I just don't know what to say. I just learned the news right now, you know. It's just a disaster for the card in Montreal, you know. It really sucks. What is good is probably one of the guy in the prelim will be bumped up in main event, and maybe we'll, you know, discover some new talent, you know. Who knows, you know, it might be a for other people, you know?
Yeah, and you don't know what will happen. I would suspect later today, if not definitely by tomorrow, they will make an announcement. For example, Benson Henderson is now saying, listen, give me an opponent. I'll step in there to save the day. Benson Henderson is not as big of a draw as Benson Henderson thinks he is. That's not going to save the day, but it will strengthen the card. And then, yeah, like you said, you know, Dillashaw got hurt. I think there was some momentum that wanted to see him and Barao part two, and we're just going to have to wait.
I agree 100%. But, hey, changing gear, Shell, I have a question to ask you. And I asked many guys in the UFC, and they were, most of them were agree.
I love
and,
it. Let's hear it.
I'm not trying to start something new, but I just want to know your opinion about.
Let's do it.
Think about it. Mixed martial art. If you would have to change the rule, would you agree that it would be better? For example, like a regular fight would be 15-minute fight without break, without round, and a championship fight would be 25-minute nonstop instead of stopping the guy at every 5 minutes to make them do again, you know, like, or would you agree that it would be better if the sport would be like 15 minutes nonstop? Because I believe that if you want to know if a guy is who's the best fighter, you just like let them fight, you know, like it used to be. And unfortunately, the sport has been legalized in a way. They try to make it look like boxing, but it's not boxing. And you know, like I asked many guys in UFC, and they all agree that it was true. I wanted to know your opinion about that.
From an athlete standpoint, yes, they should not be breaking them and bringing them up, because if you rewound the tape to when the sport started, they were trying to make it look as much like a real fight as you could, and you tried to figure out what the best disciplines were. And yes, when you're breaking guys and you're taking that takedown away, and now a guy's got to get 5 takedowns if that's the position he wants to be in, yes, it totally changes it. So in that perspective, I think all the athletes would almost unanimously agree with you. Even if they were the guys that ended up on bottom, if they were to be objective, they'd go, yes, George, there shouldn't be breaks and we should just keep going. I'm not positive that a fan would agree. I think the fans do like that separation. I think the fans even enjoy listening to the cornermen between rounds. I think that perhaps it adds a certain entertainment value as far as the pure sport goes. I think without question, you're right about that. And you know, George, I would say this though to your question, as far as championship fights being 25-minute rounds and other fights being 15 minutes, I'm not sure there's not an argument there to lessen those. I know in boxing.
Yes, I agree.
And I'll tell you what, this is from the psychology of a guy that used performance enhancers. If the rounds were less, if the training was less, if one, you know, championship fight was 18 minutes and a regular fight was 12, or just to throw those numbers out there, I can tell you a lot of that motivation to hold up and be able to push through would go away. You know, it's a very rare human that is made for 25 minutes of battle 3 times a year. It's a very, very rare human. I think that would also take a lot of the motivation and corruption, or a lot of the motivation away from the corruption. So I would also argue that shortening that time frame might be of value.
Yeah. Another thing too, that, you know, in mixed martial art, like a lot of fights are, you know, like are controversial, you know, like, and one of my fight, like that, my fight with Hendrix was controversial, for example, because it's five rounds. And I was talking to some of the guys, telling them that every time you start a new round, it's like a new fight, you know. And at the end of the fight, if you don't have the finish, it's the one that wins the more fight, the more round. It's like in the playoff in basketball, or in hockey, if you win 3 games 10-0, but you lose 4 games 1-0, you still lose the playoff, you know. So every time if you lose a round, then you lose a match, then, you know, your strategy is based on that. I think it would just make the sport more exciting if it wouldn't be round. You know, I think it would just make it, like you said, maybe shorten the time frame so people would, you know, it would be more intense and more exciting. That's what I believe.
No, I think that's right. And particularly, you know, if you were to do it, we'll play a little make-believe land here. If you were to do it that way where there was no breaks, I think you still do give the referee the ability to stand them up for inactivity. I think we have to do that. Yeah, if we're going to be a sport and we're going to sell, we've got to have some level of entertainment. So if you had that rule in place where the ref could bring you up, I think it would keep guys busy and keep the excitement going. I think initially, if somebody was to tell us the truth, that's why they put those rounds in there, is they wanted to make sure they had that thrill of the stand-up. And so they forced it, and I think that's probably where that initial round system came from.
I agree, Chad, but now the game has changed, you know. The guys, it's very hard nowadays to hold someone on the ground. You know, the guys normally when a guy wants to stand up, you know, he's able to stand up, you know, depending the skill, who's fighting who, but, you know what I mean? It's quite hard. Two good wrestlers fighting each other, it's very hard to hold a guy down if you want to stand up. You know what I mean? I think the sport has changed now. It would make it more interesting, just saying from a fan's point of view.
Yeah. I think you're right. That's interesting. You and I just started something. Let's see. We'll follow the kids on the internet to see if they agree with us. All right, George. Man, I appreciate it. Unless you got anything else to add, you can move on with your day, brother.
But thank you, and you take good care of yourself.
You're the man. I really appreciate you coming on. Talk to you soon, George.
Bye. Take care.
See you, buddy. George St. Pierre. He said something interesting there. You know, I asked him about grappling. I asked him about Metamoris. And he said, you know, I only do things to be the best. And I think at this point in my life, I don't know that I could be the best in that field. And that really surprised me. You know, he's a guy that just doesn't understand how good he is or how good he was. You know, even John Jones, who I think is pound for pound the best fighter in the world, he hasn't had pound for pound the best career. The best career ever goes to George St. Pierre. Now, John, over time, can pass that, but he's still a couple of years, maybe even 3 years away. You know, George grabbed that belt and held on to it for more years than I can count. When did he become champ? 2004? 2003? And then walked away from the sport on top, which has never been done before. And he doesn't think that he could go over and take over the world in grappling. You know, I think it's that kind of humility that drives those true greats to be as great as they are. You know, he talks about confidence, but it's not an arrogance. That was a very interesting statement by him because I don't agree. I've worked out with George St. Pierre. And I've grappled the greatest grapplers in the world. And I'm telling you, from my standpoint, I take George. I take George, particularly in an environment where there's going to be a weigh-in. That was George St. Pierre, and that was very awesome. But now let me ask you guys a question. Have you ever wondered why razors are so expensive? Maybe it's because razors are loaded up with so much shave technology. Vibrating handle, 19 blades, a laser pointer, a compass, a thermometer, even a back scratcher. I don't need any of that crap, and neither do you, so why do they keep making us pay for it? I was sick of paying out the nose for a great shave. That's why I made the switch to DollarShaveClub.com. DollarShaveClub.com delivers amazing razors and grooming supplies for a couple of bucks. It's simple and it's smart. It takes 2 minutes to get going, and then you never worry about razors again. DollarShaveClub.com gives you a free handle, and then they send you replacement blades for just a few bucks. You can get blades delivered to your door every month, every other month, twice a week, whatever you want. You set it up, they arrive like clockwork. Stop squeezing weeks of shaves out of a dull razor and start treating yourself to a fresh blade shave anytime you want. Believe me when I tell you, the DollarShaveClub.com blades are fantastic. I've never had a closer shave. Upgrade to the smart way to shave. Get yourself your shave gear where I get mine. DollarShaveClub.com/Chael. Save time, save money. DollarShaveClub.com/Chael. That's DollarShaveClub.com/Chael. When I come back, Tommy Toehold. Stick around, everybody. You're welcome.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Eddie Trunk inviting you to download the Eddie Trunk podcast at podcastone.com. Going to have some fun each and every week. Mixed bag of a lot of things, interviews with some of your favorite artists, maybe talk to some of the behind-the-scenes people, get into some commentary, answer some of your email. We'll have some good fun, so don't miss it. The Eddie Trunk Podcast, every Thursday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
Chael here for TrueCar. You know, if you're anything like me, weekends are best spent with family, friends, and of course, watching a little sports on television. The last thing you want to be is roaming around a car lot, burning your whole weekend up, hunting for that perfect vehicle. Look, there's a fix. There's a solution. Instead of doing that, you can just go to TrueCar. You can download the app right now. Any smartphone, get the TrueCar mobile app in 5 minutes. TrueCar's app not only lets you build the car you want, it tells you what other people paid, and it lets you lock in guaranteed savings, usually around $3,000 off of the MSRP. Go out and enjoy your weekends. Go to a barbecue. Go hang out with your buddies. Go out to the river unless you live in rainy Oregon like me. Get your weekends back and get the car that you want without overpaying. Save time, save money, and never overpay. Download the TrueCar app today.
Now, back to Your Welcome.
Yes, thank you.
Here's Chael Sonnen.
All right, we're back to Your Welcome, and I am joined by Triple THS, Tommy Tohol. Tommy, what's going on, buddy?
We can talk about anything, man. I don't care, you know. Yeah, whatever questions you have for me, like you said, we've spoken quite a few times in the past, and it's all been very MMA related. So I'm down for whatever you've got for me.
Well, how's life? What's new? Did you watch the Final Four last night? The big basketball game?
I did. I'm not a huge college basketball guy. College sports in general, I don't know. I mean, I like the whole amateur aspect of it, and you've got. You've got people that maybe aren't as skilled as the pros, but they try hard. But I don't know. I never really get into college sports. I did not watch the Final Four, nor did I make a bracket. but I don't know. Well, last night, what was I doing? I was working on something. I was working on some Tommy stuff. Yeah, I was. I actually forgot that the national championship was last night.
You know, you didn't miss much. And I agree with what you said. Skill-wise, yeah, they're not as good as the pros, but if you're going to back... Like, sports fans I've always found very interesting, and I want to be one, I'm just not, but I do find them interesting, excuse me, because they're cheering for laundry, okay? They're cheering for whoever is wearing a certain jersey. And the irony there, on a professional level, is that athlete not only doesn't give a damn about the fan, he doesn't care about the city. He will go to the highest bidder, and he'll go today. He'll go tonight, pack his stuff, and be in the next town if they want to pay him more money and if his contract's up. Now, you take college, those guys at least want to be there. They were recruited, sure, but they did choose that town and city. So there's a bit of a sense of loyalty to that university and to that town. It's not just about cheering for laundry. So I halfway get a college sports fan. A professional fan is really weird to me.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Honestly, when it comes to all sports and even MMA, unless I know the person that's involved personally, I honestly don't care who wins or loses in sports. I don't really have favorite teams or even favorite fighters, honestly. As long as it's entertaining to me, the actual sport of it, that's all that really matters to me.
So tell me this. How did the Tommy Tohol show get going? How did you even think to do that, an animated show? How? Where was your idea? Where was your inspiration?
Honestly, it sort of just happened out of necessity. I wanted to do something related to MMA, so I was an English teacher, and I was just starting out as an English teacher. It was like my second year, and the school that I was working at, they had to do some budget cuts, and so they cut a lot of the younger staff, and as I was looking for other jobs, I'd always been a big, fan of the sport, and I kind of wanted to do something with it related to YouTube. I didn't know what. So initially, I was just going to do a show called Pulling Guard, is what I was going to call it, and it was going to be really lame, and it wasn't a cartoon. It was just going to be me in front of a camera just talking about things happening in MMA, being a video blogger like a million other people. That,
oh, not animated. You know, not animated. This was going to be real, a shoot.
Yeah, this was going to be real,
okay.
And it wasn't even going to be particularly funny. But what happened was the quality of my equipment was not up to my liking. So I guess I was kind of forced to think of some other options. So I thought, well, maybe I'll do a podcast, but I didn't really understand how that worked. I didn't know how that I could do that. So I had recently picked up Photoshop and had been kind of messing around with it. And even though the animation style is really crude, I was like, hey, if I move their mouths up and down, I can make, you know, little cartoons. So I thought, okay, let me do this in cartoon form, because I had a decent condenser microphone, but I didn't have anything else. So I ended up making the first run, and I basically took the script that I had for the first episode of Pulling Guard, and it just didn't work because you got a cartoon character who is talking, but he wasn't saying anything funny. And I was like, you know, nobody's going to take me seriously as a cartoon character. So I thought, well, I better make this more of like a joke show. And I just sort of, you know, riffed on a couple. I mean, the first show is god awful. If you've seen it, it's three jokes about just. I think one's about Ronda Rousey, one's Kimbo Slice, and I don't remember the last one. But they're horrible. There were no guests. I mean, it was just. I don't even know how it got to where it is now compared to that. But honestly, it all just sort of happened over time as I kept doing it. But I wish I could say that I had some grand idea for this thing. It just sort of happened.
All right, so are you a one-man crew? Like, do you have writer? When I watch the show, first off, you put out content every single Wednesday, which is tough to do, and then you've got the production behind it, which I don't know anything about, but that looks kind of tough to do. Do you have people that help you, or do you write this thing from scratch yourself and then perform it every week?
Yeah, no, it's a one-man crew, minus having a couple special guests every once in a while, like I had you on that one time, and or several times, actually, and I've had a couple other people on. Minus that, it's just me. It's me and a laptop. It's nothing too fancy. I've gotten a little bit better with production since I started. You know, Tommy looks a little bit cleaner. The animation looks a little bit cleaner. I actually tried to upgrade it quite a bit recently, and people did not react very favorably to it. They wanted the old style, so I went back to the crappier style. But, it's just me doing these. So I'll come up with the concept in my head, and then I'll sort of write it out. Sometimes I just go off the cuff. I won't even write it out. I'll just say it off the top of my head as I go. And then I'll put the artwork together and animate it after that. And I've gotten a lot more efficient with it than I was in the past. I look at the way I made the show when I first started compared to now, and, you know, a show that was 3 minutes when I first started would take me 12 hours, and I could put together a 3-minute show sometimes now in an hour and a half, maybe. So.
All right, so you come out, you decide you want to do a show. All of a sudden, you know, you must surf the internet one day, and there's Dana White watching your show on his private jet before he takes off and laughing hysterically. I mean, that must have been a major success for you. You must have looked at that and gone, wow, I made it all the way to the top.
It's been pretty crazy. There's been several moments, included, you know, you coming on the show, where I'm just like, you know, how in the hell did I get to this point? But, yeah, there really has. It's weird. MMA is such an interesting community in that everybody is so interactive with people, you know, fans and the like. And, you know, for me to have interacted with people at, you know, that high up that quickly, kind of mind blowing. I feel like if I had made a cartoon about the NFL, well, one, the NFL probably would have shut me down. But two, what were the chances of me, you know, seeing, Roger Goodell watching an episode, you know, it never would have happened. So it is really, I think, unique to MMA, but there's been probably 15, 20 moments, you know, in doing this show where I was just like, is this real life? Like, how in the world did this even happen?
So, okay, I don't want to say the state we were in because I don't know how much anonymity you want to preserve, and I don't want to be the one to out anything, but I'm at a show covering it for Fox, and I send you a text, and you're like, you know what, I'm actually here, and I go, well, what are you doing here? And you say, I just had a meeting with Dana. So Dana White calls you up, says, hey, meet me at X venue, I want to talk to you. What was that like? I mean, you must have thought, first off, what does Dana want? Is this going to be good or bad? And secondly, you've protected your name, your city, your state, your identity, and you're going to have to walk into the boss's green room. How was that experience?
I've never actually told this story. Yeah, we were in the Midwest. I always just say I'm in the Midwest. And I was at a show, and actually, I did not know that I was going to be meeting with Dana on that particular evening. I had been given seats, I was watching the prelims, and one of Dana's people came up to me and was like, "Hey, Dana wants to talk to you." And I was like, "Okay." I go back there, and it was really cool. You know, we hung out for a little bit and chit-chatted. It was actually the second time I'd interacted with him, so I guess he knew who I was because of that. It was kind of a surreal moment. That's sort of how the whole, the ball got rolling with when I was involved with UFC Tonight, because there was a Fox person there as well, and I made an impression on him, that sort of got things rolling. But I was in there with Dana. And we were just kind of talking about, things going on in MMA. And when the Fox executive came in, Dana had him watch the show on his phone. And the guy really liked it, and things just sort of went from there.
Okay, I think that was George. I think that was Greenberg. But when you were on UFC Tonight, man, that was a huge hit for the show. We would tease it. People would stick around after commercial breaks. People loved it. And then all of a sudden, Tommy Toehold was gone. And so Florian and I are going, "Hey, where is the Tommy segment? We need this. Not only do we like it, but the show needs this." And they said, "We ran into a legal issue where our legal team was worried that somebody that Tommy impersonates could come back and sue us because, for what, I can't think of the legal term, but for whatever the hell, for impersonation, I guess." And that's what happened. Is that what they told you?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, this is also something, because I've had so many people ask me, "Hey, what happened with UFC Tonight?" And I've kind of been hush-hush about it, but since we're talking about it and you just mentioned it, I absolutely will talk about it here. Yeah, that's basically what happened. Essentially, we ran into a little bit of a snag with the contract because of the legal issues. They wanted to make sure they were covered, like you said, in case, a fighter comes forward and says, "Hey, I don't like what he said about me," or whatever, and I don't know why they would do so, but let's say they wanted to sue Fox. Well, they have to be covered by that. So there was insurance issues and things like that. And honestly, the cost was just too much for what it was going to be on both ends, myself and for Fox. So I think that was kind of what ended up making it not work. But we tried and tried. Steve, the producer, I know Steve. He was great. Yeah, he was great in trying to get it going. And we did try for several months to find different ways to make it work. But just in the end, it did not work out. And it was kind of a bummer. I mean, I did definitely like doing that, and I certainly didn't mind the pay. But it's one of those things where I feel like maybe Tommy is just one of those things that belongs on the internet. Because the internet's a little bit more like the Wild Wild West, and there's a lot more you can do with it, and you don't have to worry about as much.
You're talking about Tommy pushing the envelope from time to time, and I tend to agree. I think that it's awesome. I think you walk the line. I think the internet probably is the best to get the full creativity out of you, the producer and writer and star.
No, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I can say things on the internet that I couldn't say on television. It's funny, the first episode I made that was sort of like a test run for UFC Tonight, they said, "Hey, don't worry about, what you do with it. We'll bleep it out, blah, 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 blah." So I'm like, "Okay, I'll do the regular style of show." And they bleeped it out and stuff. And the next week, there was something from Standards and Practices about the show. And I had to slightly change it. But honestly, I took it as a challenge. How can I make this funny without dropping an F-bomb every 5 seconds? Which, it's not always funny to drop F-bombs, but every once in a while it is, so.
Yeah, every now and then, again, it is definitely fitting. But, man, that's a real kick. I love the story, and I'm really happy to talk to you about this stuff. Now, for a guy like you, it's kind of like in presidential election years. That's just such a gold mine for the late night hosts, the Jay Lenos and the Conan O'Briens out there and Letterman. When you get a guy like Conor McGregor, that must be, for you, the jackpot. I mean, isn't it? Don't you look at the guy and you go, okay, well, I've got next week's show and the next show just imitating what this knucklehead's out doing. Am I right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, Connor has been, I've had a couple phases of the show where certain key individuals in mixed martial arts have sort of propelled the show forward. Nick Diaz has been one of those people. You have been one of those people. Anderson Silva was one of those people. And I wasn't quite sure if I was going to get another one of those people as time was kind of going on. But then here comes Conor McGregor. And, oh, man, I mean, just from the world tour alone that they did, I could probably make 100 episodes. You know, there's so much material. And the Irish fan base is just bonkers when it comes to my show. It's nuts when I look at the numbers. You know, obviously the population of Ireland, nowhere near the United States or Canada or anywhere else, but they are right up there when it comes to views, especially on Conor McGregor episodes. So it's been a huge hit for me, and the people of Ireland have really embraced my Conor McGregor impressions, and that's helped quite a bit.
You know, if I was running that world tour, and I'm the president of the UFC, I leave Aldo at home. I bring him on the first one. When he does nothing but sit there in his suit, I send him home. And when I say that, it's not meant as a joke at all. I would get more press out of that. It reminds me of the time that Nick Diaz refused to do media for the George St. Pierre fight. And unintentionally, that created more media than anything else. That got it on SportsCenter. The fact that Nick didn't show up to a press conference and Dana was thinking about pulling him from the spot got more coverage than anything Nick could have done. I'd have gotten more mileage out of sending Aldo home than bringing him on the tour and buying him a first-class ticket from town to town. Now, at the end of everything, I'd have regretted it because Aldo finally came out of his shell. Now, Connor had to crack that shell and drag him out of it, but Aldo finally came out and it finally paid off. But there was no point in having Jose Aldo there for the first six stops.
That's very true. He didn't interact very much. You're right. That last one was the one where things, you know, kind of came to a head. And you're right. That last one seemed like one that would have been beneficial to have him at. But, yeah, I agree. I think when you do stuff like that, if they were to pull him, it definitely would have created press. I think a lot of things like that, you know, with John Jones and Daniel Cormier, that fight drew so much attention to that. And, you know, people thought it was a negative. I thought it was great. I think any publicity is good publicity. And, yeah, I think you're right. Having sent him home probably would have drawn more numbers just because of the curiosity of what was happening and why he was sent away.
Yeah, I would have just said it. I'd say because there's no point in having him here. That's it. He speaks through an interpreter. First off, what he says isn't very exciting. Then the interpreter screws it up. That's the other brutal thing about the production over there with the UFC is they, in that regard, is they get the interpreters don't interpret it right. So you get a stupid statement that then gets screwed up by a stupid guy. Now it's stupid times two. And it's like, man, somebody just get me a pillow and a blanket because I'm going to fall asleep anyway. Quit asking him questions. The only guy asking Jose Aldo a question is the guy that it's like he's getting picked last in kickball, and so they feel bad for him. Don't throw him a question. You don't want to hear from him anyway. Just keep asking him to Connor and let Connor keep on kicking ass and taking over. And I really would have. I'd have just said, Aldo, just beat it, man. Go in the back. You don't want to be here, then we don't want you here. And you know, his coach, Aldo's coach, is a guy named Andre Pettinaris. Had a great career, and he's been a remarkably successful coach. He's not only got Aldo, he's got Henan Barão, but from guys that I know of that have gone through that gym in Brazil, they got 10 more just like him that haven't broken through. But this guy, man, he doesn't know which way is up. He has come out with more interviews as though he's cracked the code. He just did one last week where he thought he had, like, cracked the code, and he was revealing the cure for cancer to everybody. And he says, you know, the UFC is after entertainment more than they are sport. And he said it like he was somehow Columbo in his yellow rain jacket sharing something with us. It's like, you dumb son of a bitch, what do you think the cameras are here for? You think the cameras are here to pick up your little sport? The cameras are here to create entertainment, to entertain the fans. And the fact that you've been in this industry this long and you're cutting an interview 5 days ago at Bloody Elbow acting as though you've uncovered something, you, much like Aldo, should get your ass back home. We don't need you on this tour. This tour isn't to promote the sport. It's to sell tickets, idiot.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I actually made a video about this that I believe you you tweeted out, and you kind of concurred that. That's the thing about this. It is a sport, you know, obviously, and it is an art, martial arts. And what happens in the cage is a sport. But this is also a business, and it's entertainment, and that is part of it, you know, whether fighters want it to be or not. And, you know, people like yourself, people like Connor, I think you guys understand the business aspect of things. And I think a lot of people get sour with the whole Connor thing, and they think, oh, you know, he hasn't proven himself enough to get this position. But honestly, he won the fights that he was in, and he was very good at marketing himself. And you know, I made a video, like I said, I think it was like how to become a star in MMA. And it was very much the same tone, essentially, that, you know, you have to treat this as a business as much as you wouldn't want to, some of these guys. But it is. It's a business. It's entertainment. And people want to be entertained.
Yeah, there it is right there. You know, you don't have to go any further back than this past weekend out there in Fairfax. You get the main event with Chad Mendes and Lamas. Now, Lamas, regardless of how this fight went with Chad, Lamas is the second hardest fight Chad Mendes has ever had. Lamas, outside of Jose Aldo, would beat everybody else that Mendes has ever fought. That's a huge win. He's ranked number 3 in the world, Lamas is. He's a former number 1 contender, and he won at least one round against Aldo, convincingly the 5th round, and he might have won the 4th round. I have to look at the judges' scorecards. The point that I'm getting at is that was a huge moment for Chad. And then when you're dealing with Chad Mendes, you're dealing with the total package. You have a very handsome guy who's very well-spoken, who's a straight-up badass. And he goes out and he stops the former number one contender in the first round, and then he kind of does a ho-hum, aw-shucks interview. And it's like, Chad, that was your moment, man. You were the main event. You're on FS1. This is a sold-out card, and you just stopped the number one contender. If you want a title shot, or you want McGregor, or you want Frankie, or you whoever it is you want to attach yourself to, now is the time. It's not tomorrow in a written interview with some.com. It's right now on live television, and I felt like he missed that opportunity, and I feel like Mendes misses it every time. Now, his skills will make up for it. His skills will get him to these title shots. I just think when I look at him, man, this is the total package. This is a coach's dream. This is a manager's dream. This is a promoter's dream. Become the fan's dream, and he's just not doing it.
Yeah, no, I agree. You know, a lot of guys, they always say, oh, I don't like to talk trash and stuff like that. You don't have to be a trash talker. Just be firm in what you want and express it. You know, I also said that before. It's, you know, some guys are like, well, I'm not a natural trash talker. That's fine. Be yourself. Be who you are, but be somebody that's going to be interesting to other people. You know, like you said, that was a huge moment for him. And the thing everybody was talking about after that card was Ally Quinta going nuts on his post-fight interview. You know what I mean? Like, that's the stuff that people were talking about. They weren't talking about Chad's post-fight interview because, like you said, it was very standard. It was very, you know, I'll fight whoever the UFC puts in front of me. This is not – that's the thing I think that a lot of people don't think about with the sport. This is not the NFL. This is not the NBA where, okay, you're in this division, you have this record, this goes to the playoffs, you play these guys, this is where you're going. This is a sport where there is matchmaking.
Right.
And, you know, with matchmaking, if you're popular, you're going to be on more cards. I mean, that's just how it works. I know they're matchmaking because it's a sport, but they're also matchmaking to make entertaining cards. If you're entertaining, people are going to want to see you.
Yeah. Now, that's the whole thing. What you're talking about, there's not a competitive architecture in place in the UFC or in boxing. We just don't have that in combat. There's not a bracketing system. You can get elevated by the fans. If you have the mandate of the masses, that will drive you up the rankings and up the card. I know plenty of guys that can beat guys in the top 10. They're not even in the UFC. They're in the practice room. They haven't been given their shot. So don't think for 1 second that top 10 or any other, there is no form of architecture. It's just the fans. The fans decide. And now, you bring up Ally Aquina. Chad Mendes and I have the same manager. So when I talk about this about Chad, I say it from a point of caring. I want him to go really far, and we're friends, and but I do feel he misses those opportunities. So I was a little critical there. However, this is what the example, Tommy, that I told my manager. I said, man, Chad needs to be halfway between what he did, the aw shucks, ho-hum, fight whoever they want me, and the ally Aquina where he absolutely rages and they just have to turn the sound off. I understand it's not good for business because we're not on pay-per-view on this one, but I will tell you, I was completely on board with ally Aquina. I thought it was awesome. I thought it was completely entertaining. Forget the words he said. I'm talking about the anger, the raging ally. He's living the gimmick, man. His last fight, he destroyed a hotel room. In this fight, he looked like he was going to punch a fan on the way back to his locker room. The guy's living the gimmick. He's the current Nick Diaz, right? He's doing all the stuff that Nick already did, and people can be as annoyed with him as they want right now. Over time, he's going to become a thing, a legend. I hope he keeps doing it. Keep busting lamps and keep screaming at in post-fight interviews. Man, I'm going to tune in.
Absolutely. He's the star of my next episode, if that tells you anything, you know. I've got Chad in there because I get everybody that's when I do these postmortems now, where I do these sort of fake pressers, I get all the people in there. But the star of the show is ally Aquina. You know, that was the guy who made the biggest impact.
I absolutely agree. Now, tell me this straight up. Did he win that fight?
I don't know. I was hard-pressed to give him the win on that. Not against, you know, nothing against Al. I thought he fought really well. I thought he did a good job of coming back. But when I was scoring it, I did not think they were going to give it to him. I don't know. What about you?
Well, you know, he's tougher than all hell. I can't believe his heart and some of the shots that he took. I can't say enough good things. As far as a 10-9 must system and you add it up at the end of the night, no, I didn't think he won a round. I thought that George did, and the crowd agreed with that. And then on top of that, I think that ally Aquina agreed with that. You know, he had said something nice to George right before they had raised hands. George was celebrating. Al wasn't. I thought that those guys had kind of mutually agreed. We know how this one went. Do you remember, did you happen to watch when Rampage fought King Mo? Did you see that fight?
Yes.
Okay, so King Mo beat him straight up, and Rampage knew it. And as they walked to the middle, they were on camera, and Rampage conceded to him. Mo said something like, I kicked your ass, and Rampage said, yeah, you got me, good job. It was something just like that, and 20 seconds later, they raised Rampage's hand. Rampage know the mic's hot, and he's like, yeah, of course I beat this guy, after he had just conceded. So that was the same thing that happened here, except the Al Iaquin interview got cut off. I think Al was ready to say, listen, I don't boo me, man. I don't make these decisions. I come out and fight hard, and he did. He fought his ass off. I just thought, you know, at the end of three rounds, man, George connected more times and c'est la vie. I thought that one was pretty obvious. So that's my long-winded answer to tell you, but I did think that it's very hard to say that Al won the fight when Al didn't think he won the fight. And I realize he hasn't come quite that far as to say that, but I think he was getting ready to before they upset him and cut his mic.
That's my guess. Too.
That's what I think he was getting ready to say is, hey, man, don't boo me. I just come out here and fight. What about when he went for that flying scissor sweep? I mean, that's a guy that's trying to win.
Yeah.
You got to respect him. I think that was fight of the night. I was surprised they didn't get an award. You know, let me tell you this. There's two rules as far as those of the night bonuses go. If you fail your drug test, you don't get the bonus. And we saw that happen with Pat Healy, if you'll remember, when he beat Jim Miller.
Yes.
And there's another rule, and this is Dana's rule. Well, these are both Dana's rule, but the other one is if you curse in your post-fight speech, you don't get the bonus. If it's on pay-per-view, do whatever you want. If you're on free TV, which they were, you don't get the bonus. In my opinion, I'm guessing right now, but I think that Al was and George were probably going to get of the night bonus. That was one of the best fights I've seen in a long time. I'm surprised more people aren't talking about what a great fight it was. I think he cost himself a bonus in that post-fight interview.
Yeah, you're right. I think he did, too. I didn't know that rule. But at the same time, it definitely, I think, raised his stock in a lot of different ways. One, like you said, he showed a lot of heart. He was really trying to win, doing anything he could. And then, like you said, the character that is ally Aquina, you know, this raging character, I think more people know who ally Aquina is now than they did before that fight happened.
Yep. And as long as he sticks with it, in a very short period of time, he's the ally of Quinn of business is going to be a good one to get in. If he comes out and starts issuing apologies, it takes it all away. He needs to stay with it. The night that Ronda Rousey beat Miesha Tate and refused the handshake afterwards, that was the hot spot of the entire evening. And Al needs to just stick to his guns, man. Live the gimmick, destroy another hotel room, screw up a post-fight interview. I, of course, don't mean that literally. Don't go out and do those things. But the point is, man, be Al Iaquinta. You're a rough dude from the streets of New York. Keep being that guy.
Absolutely.
All right, buddy. Unless you got anything else, they're going to throw me out of this studio.
No. Thanks for having me on. The new Triple THS on YouTube. I've got a couple podcasts, Machina Talk, Lowdown Random Thoughts, all that stuff. Thank you so much.
No, whoa. Sell it, brother. Don't be too fast with this. Tell us where to find Triple THS. I find it every week on Twitter. People tweet it to me. I never miss a week, but people always tweet me the link, and so I click on it and watch it. How's a normal person do it? On YouTube? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. YouTube.com/Tommy Tolhold. If you follow me on Twitter @Tommy Tolhold or on my Facebook, Facebook.com/Tommy Tolhold. I will always tweet the links out. I'll tweet them out probably too many times. So, yeah, if you're looking for the show, that's the best place to find it.
All right, cool. You don't tweet it too many times. That's how we find things out. We miss it the first couple because we're distracted because we're human beings.
Exactly.
You're the man. I appreciate you. Thanks, Tommy.
And thank you so much for having me on.
Cool. See you, buddy. Tommy Tolhold, wow. You know what? I was so worried that I was going to out him in some fashion, that I was going to say his name or I was going to say where he was from. And, you know, he's very interesting. He likes to keep that to himself because he's a school teacher by trade. Now, he's no longer in the classrooms, but he's got a certificate. He could go back at any time. And he just doesn't want to deal with any potential controversy. So he likes to keep that to himself, man. That guy is very, very fun. If you go to Twitter, follow him. Tommy Tolhold. Go find him. Go follow him. When you type his name in a search and a cartoon character with a bald head and a goatee pops up, you found the right guy. Follow him, watch his show, and then come back and thank me. And speaking of thanking me, let's hear it for old Chael. Another great episode. George St. Pierre, Tommy Tolhold gave you the real scoop on Rampage Jackson. I will be back next week. Same Chael Sun and time, same Chael Sun and channel. And for that, you're welcome.
Thanks for listening to You're Welcome with Chael Sonnen. Download new episodes every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.